Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Today, we're already into the seventh parak of Chulin. We are starting at Anasha. We started yesterday on Shabbos. And we are on Daf Tzadi. We're towards the top of the Yamun. It says Daf in the Daf Yamun, Tzadi Aleph. And the discussion for the good part of today is going to be Gid Anasha regarding Kachim. Let's refresh, let's remember what we did yesterday. The Mishnah told us that Gid Anasha is Noeg Barutz V'chutz Ha'aretz, B'fnei Abayit Shlo B'fnei Abayit. It applies in Israel, outside of Israel, when the Beis HaMikdash is there, when the Beis HaMikdash is not there, and then the Mishnah says Uvo Mugdashim, and it applies also by Hektish as well. So that means that if I bring a carbon, the Issur of Gid Anasha applies to the carbon. The Gemara asks the obvious question, well, why would you have thought it otherwise? Meaning, you have an animal that's not consecrated, obviously the Gid Anasha, the sciatic nerve of such animal, is prohibited. And then I makdish the animal, and then I sanctify the animal. Okay, of course. So nothing changed, meaning the Gid Anasha is still the Gid Anasha. It's just as us there was prior. And so why would I have thought any different, and why was there a mission to tell me that that the Gid Anasha applies by Hekdesh? That's a simple question. That's really what jump-started the whole discussion of the Gemara. And after a lot of discussion and a lot of variables in terms of machlokas, so we basically landed on two proposals in terms of what's the chiddush of the Mishnah. Proposal number one, the Gemara said, this is where we ended yesterday, is that we're talking about Bechor. We're talking about a firstborn animal that's going to get a kedusha. When is it going to get kedusha? When it's born. When is the Gid Anasha going to be usher? When it's born. Meaning we're going to put those two positions together. So that means at birth now, we have two Isurim coming simultaneously, even though we generally say Ein Isur Chal Al Isur, that one Isur cannot impose on another Isur. If they come in at the same time, so then that's fine. There's room for two to come in at the same time. So the first suggestion of the Gemara is that's what we're talking about. Talking about a Bechor where at birth, two Isurim are going to come onto that sciatic nerve. One Isur is going to be called Gid Anasha, and the other Isur is going to be called the Hektish because it's the firstborn. That was proposal number one. Proposal number two, says the Gemara, is Vlados Kachim, the fetuses of the offspring, right? Not fetuses, but the offsprings of the carbon, which is going to be a carbon. Again, it's subject to a debate. When is it going to be a carbon? At the time of conception or at the time of birth? We're going to assume in order to create this kind of scenario that's going to be at the time of birth. So then again now, at birth, two things are going to be concurring at the same time. Number one is going to be that it's going to be Hekdesh, it's going to be a carbon. Number two is the Issur of Gid Anasha. Again, assuming that Gid Anasha does not begin until actual birth. We'll put those two positions together, and once again, we'll land on the idea that the Gid Anasha can be both, the sciatic nerve can be both the Issur of Gid Anasha and the Issur of Mukdashim and simultaneously. Okay, that's what we did yesterday, that's what we got up to yesterday. We're continuing in the Gemara on Tzadi Amud Aleph, and we begin with the words Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. Lo shanu ala kachim and echalam. This discussion that we're having right now, that the Gid Anasha applies, the Issur Gid Anasha applies, that only applies to kachim and echalam. Aval, kachim she'ena echalam, but if you have a carbon that's not going to be eaten, i.e. a carbon ola is not to be eaten, ain Issur Gid noig bahem, the Issur of Gid does not apply to them. Makes sense to a degree, sure. You're not eating it. It's going up onto the mizbeach, and so therefore there's not going to be the Issur of Gid Anasha. Gid Anasha is a Issur achila, but achila for you and me, not an Issur achila for the mizbeach. Okay. V'Rabbi Yochanan Amar Echad Kachim Nechalim V'Echad Kachim Shein Nechalim Issur Gid Noeg Bahem. Whether it's kachim that's consumed, whether it's kachim that is not consumed, we can go either way. Still, the Issur of Gid is going to apply to them. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, there is an Issur Gid on even an Ola. Even on a carbon Ola. Now you think about it. Well, let's take a moment. Let's pause. Let's take a moment to think about it. That, of course, is very strange. Yeah, how do you come at the Issur? Is he, huh? Right. I mean, is the Gemara suggesting right now that the Issur is to put it? Okay, very good. All right, so what Phil's suggesting, which we're going to see now in the Gemara, is that you have to remove the Gid Anasha before you put it up onto the Mizbeach. Okay, that's a little bit strange. Amar Rav Papa v'lo pligi. So Rav Papa makes the following suggestion. Now, the complexity of this sugya is going to be that we're going to have one, two, three ways of understanding the machlokis of Rav Yochanan and Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. Okay? Number one, Amar Rav Papa. There are going to be two versions of Rav Papa. Amar Rav Papa, v'lo pligi kan la halkoso, kan la ha'aloso. Okay. There really is no debate over here. Meaning these two positions, Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, are really working in synchronicity with one another. They're in concert. And each one of them is discussing a various aspect of the Ginnanush of a Karban Olah. Meaning, in terms of getting Malkus, so you're not going to get Malkus. Meaning that it's a Ginnanush of a Karban Olah. Karban Olah is not to be eaten. So you're not allowed to eat it anyway. So you're not going to get Malkus. In terms of bringing it up onto the Mizbech, what the Gemara refers to as Laha Aloso, so then you can leave the Gidanasha on the animal, meaning that there's no prohibition of the Gidanasha on the animal. Okay? And as Rashi points out over here, as the Gemara later will point on, look at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Al Kain lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael es Gidanasha. B'nei Yisrael is not allowed to eat the Gidanasha. How about the Mizbeach? Mizbeach is a card-carrying member of the Jewish people? No. So in other words, the other way around. I'm sorry. For Malkus, right, I'm sorry. For Malkus, right, there is an Isra Malkus, meaning a punishment of Malkus for you to eat it. In terms of offering up onto the Mizbeach, that's not a problem. You can offer it up onto the Mizbeach. Okay. That's version number one of Rav Papa. Version number two of Rav Papa. The differences between choletz and halah. Now, what's choletz? Choletz means to subdivide, to separate. Okay. The meaning. There's an opinion that we expressed earlier, which is that it's not noheg by the carbonola. What does that mean? It's not noheg by the carbonola? Means that you don't have to take the time to separate the gedanasha. Right, you don't have to be choletz. You could offer the thigh of any particular carbonola as it is. Okay, and what about the one who says that you are that the Isser of Gidanasha does apply? That's talking about offering it in of itself. Meaning, if the Gidanasha were to be separated from the thigh, so then you cannot offer the Gidanasha by itself. As part of the leg, you can do that. But in of itself, you cannot do it. Now, Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar La'aloso Pligi. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak, now our third opinion of how to understand the Machlokas says it actually is a Machlokas. So again, it's a little bit intricate. We have two opinions in the Gemara, Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef says that the Isser of Gidanasha is not Noeg by a Carbonola. Rabbi Yochanan says the Isser of Gidanasha is Noeg by a Carbonola. We have so far now two versions of Rav Papa in terms of how to understand. Both versions maintain that there is no debate amongst these Amoraim. It's just a question of either Malkus versus offering it up onto the Mizbeach, or separating the Gidanasha and once the Gidanasha is separated. Okay? Meaning that if the Gidanasha is part of the animal, offer it up on the Mizbeach. If you separate the Gidanasha for whatever reason, you cannot offer it up on the Mizbeach. And now we're going to have Rav Nachman Yitzchak and says, no, you're mistaken. There actually is a debate taking place over here. Right? According to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, pligi, there is a debate. And the machlokas is about halah. Can I offer the Gidanasha up onto the Mizbech? Titanya. And the Gemara says, and how do I know this? How do I know that there's a debate regarding the Gidanasha? So one braisa says, V'yitir ha-kohen ha-sakol ha-mizbech l'rabos ha-tzamos ha-agir ma-kanayim ha-talafim, that when it comes to the carbonola, as its name indicates, as the Torah indicates, the whole thing, right? The pasuk reads, "V'hiktir hakohen es hakol." The whole thing goes up onto the mizbech. So, and that includes the bones and the sinews and the hooves and the and the horns and the hooves. All that goes up onto the mizbech. Yachalafilu pirshu. Okay, what if anything separates? Meaning, what if a bone comes dislodged? What if a horn becomes dislodged? What if a hoof becomes dislodged? Tamalomar ve'asisa olosecha habasar ve'hadam. The main component of a carbon, even a carbon ola, is basar ve'dam. is the meat of the animal and the blood of the animal. Those are the two main components of a carbon olam. Okay. So in other words, let me just finish reading the braisa. If the key component of any carbon, specifically carbon ola, is the basar v'dam, so maybe I should sit there prior to the offering of the carbon ola and start separating. Take away the bones, take away the hooves, take away the horns, take away the sinews, and just offer the meat up onto the mizbech. So how do I look at these two psukim? Meaning I seem to be getting different instructions from the Torah in terms of what to offer the carbon ola. One pasuk says, that's a kol. The other pasuk says, ha basar v'hadam. So how do I understand this? So the Gemara says, ha ketzad, mechubarim yalu pirshu afilo b'rosh Hashem mizbech yardu. So the answer says, the braisa is, if it's mechubar, if it's connected, offer it up onto the mizbech. If it's separated, so then do not offer it up onto the mizbech. In fact, if it's separated, meaning a bone comes dislodged, don't even put it up, even if you're on the top of the Mizbeach, don't put it on the fire. Bring it back down again. Okay, so you have Brisa number one. And Brisa number one says that, everything goes up only if something becomes disconnected, then and only then do you bring it back down. And who's this opinion that says in Pirshu, if it separates yardu, you need to bring it down? The Gemara says that belongs to Rebbe. We learned on a brisa. Even if they separate, when the pasuk says basav adam, meaning only blood and only meat, that's only pikiya. That's only if. From the heat of the top of the Mizbeach, it flies off, meaning I put it on the fire. Now, what if something flies off? There's a lot of heat. The heat's going to generate a lot of action, a lot of activity. Right? Think of that big bonfire where you hear the crackle. So you're going to have things falling off. So, according to this Braisa, only if it's basar or dam do you have to go back, pick it up, and put it up onto the Mizbeach. Otherwise, you do not need to put it on the Mizbeach. If you have burnt sinew and burnt bone that fell off that flew off the mizbeach, you don't have to put that back on again. But if you have burnt meat that flew off the mizbeach, put it back on again. Rabbi Omer, okay, that's the Tanakama. Rabbi's of the opinion. Again, Rabbi's just struggling with the fact that the Torah on one hand says everything, on the other hand says basav adam. Ha-ketza mechubar mialu parshu afilu b'rosh Hashem mizbeach yardu. That if it's mechubar, you put it up. If once it separates, you bring it back down again. Okay. That is the Tanakama versus Rebbe. Now the Gemara just takes a moment to analyze this machlokes v'rabanan mechubar lo itzerkra. Now according to the Chachamim, what if it's mechubar, what if it's connected? Don't even need a pasuk. Why? Because look, the Torah says that we have to take the head of the carbon of the carbon ola, right? The Torah says, es rosho. You have to take the head of the carbon ola and put it up onto the mizbeach. Okay, what's the head made of? It's such a simple question. But think about it. What's the head made of? Bones. Head is made of bones. It's mostly skull. I mean, you want to call the brain meat? Maybe the brain is basar in this context. But the majority of the head is made up of skull. And the Torah says, put the head up onto the Mizbeach. So clearly, if something is connected to the animal, right? Something which is not actual carbon, meaning actual carbon is either basar or dam. But the Torah says, put the head up. What the Torah is already right there instructing us is that if there's anything connected to the animal, to the meat of the animal, it by definition is going to go up onto the Mizbeach. Right? The Torah cannot possibly imagine that for the head, where it's just going to scrape off some whatever meat there is on the head. So the Gemara says no. So ki itzir krol parshu. So that's it. So in other words, if it's mechubar, then I have to bring it up. The only pasuk that's needed now, in other words, there's a drasha opportunity. So the only drasha we're going to make is once it separates. Once it separates, I'm still going to put it up onto the mizbeach. And the only time that I don't need to put up on the mizbeach is if I tried and it flew off. Now, what's Rebbe going to tell you? Look, Mechubarim de'etera, those things which are connected, which are mutter, lo, it's their krag, l'rebuy, ki it's their chala, gir'anasha be'mechubar. So the only thing that I need a pasuk for is for the gir'anasha, and specifically when it's mechubar, when it is connected. V'rabbanan, that's going to be Rebbe. Now back to the chachamim, mimashke yisrael, minamutter li'yisrael. So the Torah says, mimashke yisrael. The Torah over there indicates that it has to be something. The Mizbech is fed something that you and I would be eating. Min hamutter li Yisrael. Okay, and the Gidon Asher is not mutter. The Rebbe, mi did have a chel of Adam. And Rebbe's going to tell you, what do you mean? The Mizbech only eats things which are mutter. That's not true. The Mizbech eats blood, the Mizbech eats chelav. So the Rabbana, now the Chachamim's counter argument to that is, mitzvah and mekach shani. No, that's different. Meaning, and this is going to be a little bit strange. It's going to be strange to explain. Meaning the Chachamim's counter-argument is, look, generally speaking, the Mizbech has got to keep kosher. Okay, generally speaking. We have a Pasuk, Mimashke Yisrael. Now granted, that Pasuk is not from Chumash, it's from Navi. But still, right, Pasuk in Yechezkel. But still, the Pasuk in Yechezkel is reflecting a concept, an idea that has been around, you know, since Moshe Rabbeinu, which is that the Mizbech has got to keep kosher. Mimashke Yisrael, whatever you and I would eat, the Mizbech would eat. Whatever you and I don't eat, the Mizbech will not eat. Ah, what about Chelev? What about Dam? Those are two items where you and I wouldn't eat them. They're Aser. Not just Aser, by the way. Aser Kares. You and I wouldn't eat them, and yet we'll put them on the Mizbech. So the Chachamim will say that is different. Meaning, it's an exception to the general rule. General rule is Mizbech is going to keep kosher. And the exception to the general rule is Chelev Dam, because the Torah goes out of its way to tell us on both of those occasions, you have to put the chelav up onto the mizbech. You have to put the dam on the mizbech. Okay. Now what comes out from all this is that we have, this is summarizing and concluding the statement of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. We have a machlokus between Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef and Rav Yochanan. The issue is the ginanasha of the carbon ola. What do I do with it? Do I put it up onto the mizbech or do I not put it up onto the mizbech? So again, Rav Papa had two ways of trying to synchronize the two positions. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, no, they are in fact arguing. They're arguing whether or not you could bring the Gid Anasha up onto the Mizbech. If it's part of the animal, if it's in the animal, everyone agrees you put it up onto the Mizbech. What if it separates off the animal? So now we have a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rebbe, whether or not the Gid Anasha by itself can go up onto the Mizbech. Does the Mizbech have to quote-unquote keep kosher? That's the opinion of the Chachamim. So if that's true, then the Gidon Asher cannot go up onto the Mizbeach. Or no, according to Rebbe, even if it's porridge, even if it separates, the Gidon Asher still can go up onto the Mizbeach.
When you say by itself, that means that actually somebody dissects it out and then brings
correct,
it.
Correct.
Are we talking about the inner one or the outer one?
Now, the Gemara is not clear about that yet. I mean, we'll talk more. The distinction between inner and outer is going to come up later on in the Gemara, right? At this point in time, the Gemara is not clear. Okay. And now, Halacha, Amar Rav Huna, Gidon Asher Sha'ola, Cholzo L'Tapuach. So we have a statement by Rav Huna. Right? You know, I always find this to be fascinating, that Rav Huna, who lives beyond the destruction of the Second Temple, hundreds of years after the destruction of the Second, not hundreds, yeah. The Temple was destroyed in the year 70. Rav Huna was a student of Rav, right? A couple hundred years. After the destruction of the Second Temple, and Rav Huna is issuing a psak. He's issuing a ruling regarding this issue about whether or not I can offer a Gidon Asher up onto the Mizbech, the Gidon Asher of an Ola, of a carbon Ola. So Amar Rav Huna, Gidon Asher Sha'ola, Choltso, Litapuach. So when it comes to the Gidon Asher of a carbon Ola, here's what you're going to do. Okay? You're going to treber. Treber is that Yiddish word. It means simply to remove the Gidon Asher from the animal. Okay? What does the word actually mean? Me too. Okay, but it's a word we've been using for years. So Gidon Asher Sha'ola Cholzo L'Tapuach. So you have to remove the Gidon Asher, which is again a painstaking process, and you put it on the Tapuach. Now Tapuach means apple, but that's not what it means over here. It means the following. Rashi describes that on the top of the Mizbeach you have a big pile of ashes. Meaning, once you right, a lot of things are being burnt onto the Mizbeach. Once burnt, it's now reduced to ashes. You take the ashes and you put it on a pile on the top of the Mizbeach. Ultimately, obviously, this pile is going to grow and grow, and eventually, you're going to have to clean it out. But this pile of ashes is called the tapuach. Okay. And what the and what Rav Huna is telling us is, take the gidon asher, separate it, don't burn it on the top of the mizbeach, just put it right on the tapuach, put it right on the ash pile. So the Gemara says, it's a strange psak. So I'm Rav Chista Maridichi. So Rav Chista says, Maridichi, like, who's the author of such a statement? Like, oh my gosh. Really? That's what we're going to do with the gidon asher, the carbonola? So miksiv alken lo yochal mizbeach alken lo yochal b'nei Yisrael ksiv. So first of all, a point that we made earlier, but now these are Amoraim that are discussing it. The Torah says, alken lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael. The Jewish people can't eat the gidon asher. Mizbech can handle it. Mizbech has got no problem with the gidon asher. Mizbech was not prohibited by the Torah. Right? We're speaking about the Mizbech as if it's the kaviyachal, if it's a consumer. It was never prohibited from eating the gidon asher. So I don't understand. The Rav Huna, and what's Rav Huna's response to that? Imashke Yisrael, and Amotel Yisrael. So it's the same achlokas that we just saw amongst the Tanayim that are now being experienced by the Amoraim. And right. It seems like we're going the same back and forth. And Rav Huna's going to say no. Rav Huna says Imashke Yisrael. What do you mean? Mizbeach has got to keep kosher. It eats whatever we eat, and it cannot eat whatever we cannot eat. So once the gidon asher has been separated, you can't put the gidon asher up onto the mizbech. Meitzvah, the Gemara says, let me challenge now from a b'raisa. Gidon asher shel shlamim, so michabdo la'ama v'shel ola ma'alehu. So the gidon asher of a carbon shlamim, that we for sure can't eat. There's no discussion over there. It's not going up onto the mizbech. It's being consumed. The shlamim, the meat of the shlamim is being consumed by me and you, or whoever's actually bringing it. So there's no discussion to be had. The gidon asher is prohibited. So there, the gidon asher, you separate it, and you put in the ama. Ama is a canal. There's a little canal that runs through the azara that washes away all the schmutz. So one of the pieces of schmutz is going to be the discarded gidon asher of the carbon shlamim. Vishal ola, now, if you have a gidon asher of a carbon ola, ma'alehu. So the braisa says you offer it up onto the mizbeach. Now, that's not Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, you separate it, you bring it up to the Mizbeach, but you put it on the tapuach, you put it on the ash pile. You do not burn it on the top of the Mizbeach. So the Gemara immediately goes into attack mode. My lav ma'aleo ma'ktira. Sounds like from the Braisa that you offer it up onto the Mizbeach and you burn on the Mizbeach. Usually the word ma'ale means bring it up and burn it. So the Gemara answers in defense of Rav Huna, lo ma'ale v'chotso. So the Gemara, in defense of Rav Huna, says, no, here ma'aleo just simply means bring it up. Bring the gidon asher up, separate the gidon asher, put it on the ash pile, do not burn it on the top of the mizbeach. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. So what's the point? Meaning, if you're not burning it on the top of the mizbeach, why are you separating the gidon asher? Oh, I understand why you're separating the gidon asher. Why are you bringing it up onto the mizbeach? That doesn't seem to make any sense. And the Gemara says, Mishum shenemar ha'kruvu na lefchasecha. So we have a pasuk in Malachi. We quote this pasuk often when it comes to karbanos. When we are offering a karban, it is like offering to an officer. Meaning you have to make it respectable, you have to make it acceptable. And as Rashi explains over here, imagine we have a karbanola. Now, we are offering basically cut up animal on the top of the mizbeach. So we have this pasuk, hakrivu nal fchasecha. That offer it like you would offer to a prince. Okay? In other words, if you were being served a nice piece of meat, you would like to see the meat in a nice, presentable state. You do not want to see the meat cut up. You do not want to see the meat dissected. You don't want to see that the gidon asher was removed, and all you're basically looking now is scraps and cut up meat, and it's just not nice, it's not presentable. So, when we're offering the animal, carbonola, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we put on the mizbeach, so we want it in nice, when we're actually bringing it up, we want it in nice whole pieces. When we're on the top of the mizbeach, okay, so then we'll take the gidon asher, we'll separate the gidon asher, we'll put the gidon asher on the tapuach. Okay, we won't actually offer the gidon asher. But at least at the point of presentation, you're going to want it to be nice and presentable pieces. So, Tanya Kavase de Rav Huna, the Gemara.
Taking it off is presentable then?
Meaning once it's on the top of the Mizbeach, now we could start, you know, dissecting it, fork and knife and cutting it up. But at least while putting it onto the Mizbeach, it's going to look presentable. Yes, Danny.
The word chaver comes from karba. Karba is an Aramaic word meaning
keller. Oh, that's very good. Oh, that's excellent. Okay.
There's the discussion what Gid Anoshe is
here. Huh?
There's no discussion what Gid Anoshe is actually.
Because it's coming up yet. We're just in the beginning. We're still in the very beginning of the parak. We're going to talk in detail later on about what exactly the Gid Anoshe is. That discussion begins. It'll take a little bit of time. Not yet, but okay. Tomorrow? The day after? Yeah. A lot of agadas are coming up. All right, let's continue. Tanya Kavasi de Rav Huna, the Gemara says, look, I have a brisa that supports Rav Huna as well. And the brisa reads like this. Gid Anoshe Shoshlame Mechab de Lama V'sha'ola Chosola Tepuach. This is one of the stranger moments that happened in the point of Gemara. Here the brisa says it straight out like Rav Huna. The Gemara kind of was like holding this brisa, you know, waiting to play its cards, and then the Gemara brings out the brisa. The brisa says straight out, just like Rav Huna, that you keep the piece intact, bring the piece up onto the top of the mizbeach, the thigh of the animal, and then afterwards, then you traber. Then you take the Gid Anoshe out, and you don't burn the Gid Anoshe on the mizbeach because mimashke Yisrael, but rather you leave the Gid Anoshe on the tepuch, on the ash pile. Tanan hasam, we learned in the Mishnah, tepuch haya be'emsa mizbeach. Mishnah in Tamid. We will learn this Mishnah later on in Daf Yomi. It'll be one of the last things we'll be seeing before the seal. So tapuach haya be'emsa mizbeach. There was an ash pile. Tapuach, it's called an apple. I guess that's because of shape. So tapuach haya be'emsa mizbeach. Pamim haya lav kishlosh meos kor. It had about 300 kor. 300 kor is almost. I'm going to choose my words carefully. An obscene amount. Meaning it's an amount that we really cannot possibly imagine on the top of the mizbeach. A kor. A kor is enough seed that would plant a field of 75,000 square amas. Okay, wait, just wait. So, and how much does that come out to in volume? So I don't know. But what? 675 cubic amas. Okay. So that's huge. And what the Gemara now is suggesting is that this tapuach had 300 of them on the top of the mizbeach. Amar Rava Guzma. So Rava says this is an exaggeration. Okay? by the way, I told you this before. The number 300, okay? Your number 300 is always going to be the code, right? The chachamim of a code in which they speak. So whenever they speak in exaggerated terms, they always use the number 300. 300 parsa. Right, 300 parsa. I'm saying 300. 300 is basically their way of saying a lot, okay, and not to be taken literally. Obviously, a very dangerous discussion, by the way, because essentially the Gemara says that there are times when you don't have to take things literally because they didn't mean it literally. Okay, hishku es atamid bekosho zahav. Now, the carbon tamid would be given water to drink prior to its shechting. If I remember correctly, the purpose of this is it flays easier when hydrated. Right, and a hydrated animal flays easier. I'm not speaking from experience. I'm just telling you what the Mefarshim say. So Hishku is the Tamid because Kosholzav, and when they would give the Tamid a water to drink, they would drink with Kosholzav, a golden cup. I'm a Rav Guzma. So Rav says that's an exaggeration.
Which part?
Gold. Now, it wasn't a golden cup. It was an ice cup, but it was not necessarily made out of gold. I'm a Rabbi Amma Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Dibra Nevi'im Lashon Havai, Dibra Chachamim Lashon Havai. You're going to find this. You're going to find this kind of like an inflated hyperbolic speech in Chumash, in Navi, and by the Chachamim as well. So Dibra Chachamim Lashon Havai Hadamarn. So we already gave you a number of examples where the Chachamim spoke in hyperbole. And in a little bit of caricature, if you will. Right? Exaggeration. So we saw that by the amount of the Mishnah and Tamid, about how much ashes was on the top of the Mizbeach, 300 kor. We saw that in terms of the Tamid, the carbon Tamid, drinking water from a golden cup. Okay, somewhat exaggerated speech. Hadamar, Dibra Torah Lashon Havai. What about the Torah? The Torah speaks in exaggeration. So the Gemara says, yeah, sure. I'll give you an example. Arim Gedolos. Because the Gemara, I guess the Gemara just will not entertain the idea that we're going to be serving a cow in a golden cup.
Right. It's a big, so you say
300. I hear you. I hear you. Right. It needs right. It needs more. It needs more. More explanation. Right. Right. But it does choose gold as the metal. All right. It's a fair question. Arm gedolos v'tzuros bashamayim. Yeah. So when discussing the fortified cities of those who lived in Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Canaan at the time, so it says that there. Their fortified cities, the walls went up to the sky. The walls didn't go up to the sky. It's an exaggerated form of speech. Okay. And Dibur Navim Lashon Havai V'tipaka Ha'aretz L'Kolam. Same thing with Navi. Malachim Aleph. Right? Who are we talking about? V'tipaka Ha'aretz L'Kolam. So the entire world heard the noise went out throughout the entire world. Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Nachman, Amar Shmuel b'shloshim mekamos dibur chacham lashon havai Elohein. Three places in Mishnayos we're going to find this exaggerated language, and they are Tapuach, Gefen, and Paroches. So Tapuach Adamar, and so we already pointed out the Tapuach, right? The pile of ashes on the top of the Mizbeach, that's the Mishnah Tamid. Gefen did now. What about the Mishnah regarding Gefen? We learned in a Mishnah. Okay. Also in Tamid, going to find this in Midos as well. Gefen shalzav ha'isomet up his choshehecha. There was a golden grapevine, meaning a grapevine that was gold that was carved and made look into a grapevine. Ha'isomet up his choshehecha, and that was at the entrance of the hecha of the temple courtyard. Umudla agabe klunsus, and it was spread out over poles. Okay, so in other words, it kind of looked like a chuppah, so to say. And the top of the chuppah was not actual grapevines, but gold. Gold to make look like grapevines. V'chol mishayam isnadev gargir o eshkol. Now, here's the thing. You know, you walk into shuls and you find like golden leaves in the beginning of the shul. Right? It's correct. It's an old minhag. And now I'm going to say, how old is this minhag? Goes back, huh? Meaning, you walk into any shul and, you know, they have like golden leaves. Right, they can eat chayim, and they put it, and you put it, and you put a golden leaf on it, and you know, in honor of a simcha, bar mitzvah, or you know, to memorialize. So here also, they basically had this kind of fundraising that was done in the Beis Hamikdash, right? I mean, makes sense, by the way. We, you know, our shuls are a mikdash maat, so it makes sense. So ogargil lashkom evi v'tolaba, and so someone now wants to offer. Right, a golden grape, a golden cluster. So he's going to put it on the top of this edifice of this type of canopy. Amar Rav Elazar, Rabbi Tzedek, Ma'isa Hayav, Nimel Alav Shalosh Meos Kohanim Lifnosa. And there was an incident once where there were 300 Kohanim who needed to remove it because there was so much. Again, there's that 300 number. Okay, code of the Chachamim to tell us was a form of exaggeration. Paroches. Now, what about the paroches? Paroches was the curtain that separated the Heichal from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And first, the Mishnah describes for us the paroches. Rabbi Shimon Gamla Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Azgan. Paroches Ovya Tefach. It was one tefach thick. So it was 4 inches thick. So this is something that was embroidered, something that was woven, and it's a tefach thick. So a little bit thicker than our sweaters that were made for us. The Al Shivim Ushnaim Nirim Nereges, it was woven with 72 nirim, right? I don't exactly know what these are. One of the 39 malachas of Shabbos. So you're not on Shabbos allowed to. One of the 39 malachas is you're not allowed to make shnei bati nirim. You're not allowed to make two of these nirim. These are kind of instruments used for weaving. I don't fully understand. I've gone through this many times. I still don't understand how the weaving process works. Anyway, there are 72 of them. Now every strand was made up a composite of 24 threads. Arka arba'im ba'am. I'm sorry. Va'arba chutim. Arka arba'im ba'ama v'rachva asrim ba'ama. Now, by the way, none of this so far is exaggeration, meaning these are the actual numbers that we used in order to make the parochah. So far, so good. And its height and length was 40 by 20, which again is perfect because that's the size of the entrance of the to go from the Heichal into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Omishmonim v'shtei ribuy na'aseh ushtayim osim b'shana v'shalosh me'os kohanim matbilin osa. And 20,000, right? 20,000 people were there to make it. 20,000 threads were there in order to produce it, and 300 kohanim would be needed to tovel it. Meaning, there comes a time once upon a time, every now and then, that there is a requirement to tovel it. If in the effect it becomes tameh, right? It's a kli, it's a utensil, so it's a sheet, so it's subject to becoming tameh. So if it is in fact subject to becoming tameh, because it's a partition, it serves as basically as a wall.
So that's the exaggeration part.
And the exaggeration part is the number of kohanim that were needed to tovel it. It says 300.
So these are the only three exaggerations.
Contrary to what the Gemara said previously, by the way. Right, and then what about the tapuach? Maybe. Right. So maybe there's an argument. Maybe, and again, I'm just suggesting. So maybe this list of three is a list of three with the number 300.
But there are other 300s.
Yeah, there are.
Maybe that's
these are. How about this? Let me try it this way. These are the list of three. These are the list of three that are in the Mishnayos. Right. The other time. Right. You're right. There are other times in the Gemara where the Gemara uses number 300. Maybe these are your Mishnayos references. And again, by the way, that's a very bold statement of me to make because I don't have encyclopedic knowledge of Mishnayos like I should. Okay, all right. Let's continue in the Gemara. Yerech shel yamin v'yerech shel smol masnisen the lo k'Rabbi Yehuda d'tanya. So here now the Gemara is moving on to the next part of the Mishnah, and now we're going to be discussing which gid hanasha. Two sciatic nerves run down the animal again. The sciatic nerve is really the culmination of the spinal cord. Spinal cord runs down the back through the backbone, through the vertebrae of the animal, as it does through humans as well. And then what happens is that it basically now, it goes to the back of the animal, the rump of the animal, and it splits into two. One now is going to be going over the right leg of the animal, the right thigh of the animal, and the other one's going to be going over the left thigh of the animal. Our Mishnah teaches us both are gid hanashes, meaning obviously both are sciatic nerves, but both have the status, the iser achila of the gid hanasha. So tells us our Mishnah. The Gemara then says there's an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And now we get introduced to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Masisan de lo k'Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah does not fall like Rabbi Yehuda. D'tanya, we learned in a brisa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, eino noheg ela ba'achas. It only applies to one. Now, read the words of Rabbi Yehuda carefully. It only applies to one. V'hadas machra'as eshel yamin. And it's logical to suggest that it's the right. Okay. Oh, okay. We're gonna get to that now. But the Gemara says now. Again, just let's review Rabbi Yehuda. Here's what we know for sure. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not two, it's one. On that we know for sure.
Which one?
The question is which one. And Rabbi Yehuda does not say it's the right one. Rabbi Yehuda says hadas machra'as shel yamin. I think logic would tell you that's the right one. Now, ibay lehu misha pshita leil Rabbi Yehuda. Umay das Torah, o dilma sefukim esafkele, umay das noten. So the Gemara says, I wonder, Rav Yehuda is saying das machra'as definitively, meaning I know it's the right one. And when it says das, it means das Torah, meaning it's the opinion of the Torah. It is a strange way to express it. I cannot think of another time where we have such an expression, right? When hadas machra'as, and that's a reference to the Torah. But the Gemara is entertaining that maybe that's what Rav Yehuda means. It's Das Torah. On the other hand, it could be Das Nota, meaning it's my own opinion. Meaning I don't know. I know that it's only one and not two. I don't know which one. My own logic will dictate that it's the right one. but I'm not saying it definitively. Simple question on the table is Rav Yehuda know for sure it's the right one, or is he guessing that it's the right one? And if he's guessing that it's the right one, so we're going to have to be machmir, even according to Rav Yehuda, because it's only a guess. And if it's only a guess, we're still going to have to entertain the possibility that it may be the left one. Tashma.
But because of his doubt, how could you ever? How could you ever give anybody a warning?
Good. Gemara is going to ask that very question later on. Okay, you're right on the money. Tashma. Someone's vaginim. I know. So Yusufu l'shisha asar. So the bones, the sinews. No star. Any leftover meat should be burnt on the 16th. Any good guesses what we're talking about? The right? Carbon Pesach. So now, 16th day of Nisan, what's wrong with the 15th? It's Yontif. That is the correct answer. The correct answer is Yontif. Right? Rashi says, Ain't star from Kashmir Yontif. You're not allowed to burn Kodesh on Yontif. Right. Rashi makes sure that we understand that when it says the bones are being burnt. Bones aren't nosar. So Rashi points out that the bones that we're talking about are marrow bones, and they still have marrow inside of it. Okay. Because bones by itself do not need to be burnt. Bones by itself do not become nosar, are not subject to nosar. So you have bones, you have sinews, and you have actual nosar, meaning meat, actual meat that you left over, so they get burnt on the first day of Chol HaMoed, 16th day of Nisan. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. We say gidim. We're talking about some sort of ligaments. Remember, I mentioned this from day one of the seventh parak. The word gid is a more generic term. It's referring to basically any tendon of the body, right? Any real hard substance. So sinew of the body. So when we say gidin, so what exactly do we mean? Maya vida ta'i gide basar lechlinu. So if it's gide basar, if it's just the end of a muscle, so it should have been eaten. And di yaser, and if it was left over, so then hainu nosar. Right. So then the Braisa covered that already, because the Braisa said, and if nosar was left over. So elagide tzavar. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's the sinews of the neck. So ila basan enu lishdinu. So the Gemara says, well, I don't understand though. If it's not, if they're not edible, so then you don't have to burn them. Meaning, again, nosar is only subject to those things which are edible. So the Gemara says that this particular braisa is going like Rav Yehuda, who says that it's with reference to the Gid Anasha, meaning the Gid in the braisa is a reference to the Gid Anasha, and it's Eino Noeg Ela Ba'achas, and it only applies to one of the two. Okay, all this makes sense? It will in just a moment. So the Gemara says, look, according to Rav Yehuda, one Gid Anasha is mutter and the other one's aser. Meaning, in theory, one is edible and the other one is not edible. According to Rav Yehuda, again, we have two understandings of Rav Yehuda. If we work with a I don't know understanding of Rav Yehuda, meaning it's a safek, so now everything here makes perfect sense. Because I sit down to eat my Karm Pesach, I eat all the meat, I get to the Gid Anasha, I've earmarked. Here's my right one, here's my left one. According to Rav Yehuda, one of them I can now eat as dessert. Right? Delicious. Sciatic nerve of the carbon Pesach. The other one, I cannot eat. If you assume that Rav Yehuda says das machras means, I'm guessing, but I don't really know, so then you understand. One of them is mutter, one of them is aser, but simply for lack of knowledge, I will not eat both of them because I don't know which one's the one that's aser, which one's the one that's mutter. And that's why every 16th day of Nisan, according to Rav Yehuda, you're going to end up with two Gid Anashas just sitting in front of you because you didn't know which one you were supposed to eat. So it actually, this braisa works out beautifully according to Rav Yehuda. However, but if we know, if Rav Yehuda is saying, I know definitively, right one's aser, left one's mutter, so what's the issue? The left one you're going to eat on the Seder night, right? For the one who wants it the most.
You're required to eat it.
And right. I mean, I joke, but you're right. You're required to eat it. And the right one. It's also for you to eat. And it's not noser. You're not allowed to eat it. So Amar Avika Bar Chinin al Olam Emelacham Mishab Shitalei V'Hach B'Maizkinan Kishehukra Ulu V'Sof Nitarvo. So answer number one of the Gemara is maybe the case of the Braisa, meaning let's assume that Rabbi Yehuda knows definitively. It's right, not left. And maybe what happened is that even though I put a little sign right next to the right one that says right, and I put a sign to the left one that says left, somebody took away the signs, and now I don't know which one's which, and that's why I'm left on the 16th day of Nisan with my Gidon Asher. Answer number one. Answer number two on the top of Sadi Aleph and Aleph. Let's just go through these answers. Lo nitzricha ela l'shmano. We're talking about the fat of the Gidon Asher. This is the first time in the parak that we're going to be talking about the fat of the Gidon Asher, and it's going to come up a couple more times in this parak. And that is the following. That the Torah prohibits the Gidon Asher. There is a little bit of chalev, there's a little bit of fat, right? The Gemara refers to it as the shemen of the Gidon Asher. According to the strict letter of the law, it's fine. Because it's only the Gidon Asher that's prohibited. However, the Gemara points out, the Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Shmano Mutter, V'Yisrael Kedoshim Nagu Bo Isser. Really, in truth, the Shmano Shogid, the fat, the oil that surrounds the Gidon Asher, really it's Mutter, but Yisrael are Kedoshim, Yisrael are Jewish people are holy, and they took it upon themselves not to eat the Shemen of the Gidon Asher.
A lot of times when you dissect fat around it looks just like the nerve. You cannot.
Okay, that could have resulted in the reason why the right. Bnei Yisrael were machmir. And one more answer. Ravina Amar Lo Nitzrucha Ela Ched Rav Yehuda Mashmol Dam Rav Yehuda Mashmol Shnei Gidim Hein Panim Samach LeEtzem Aser VeChayavin Alav Chitzon Samach LeBasar Aser VeEin Chayavin Alav. The Gemara tells us again. This is going to be coming up later on as well. There are two Gidon Ashes. There are the panim, the internal, and it's close to the etzem, it's close to the bone, and that's prohibited, and your chayiv, and the chitzon, and the outer one, which is more proximate to the meat, to the muscle, that's aser, and you're not going to be chayiv upon it. So maybe the brice over here was describing the inner and the outer, meaning Rabbi Huda knows full well the right versus the left, but the brice over here that says that you're ending up with Gidon Asher in the morning, why are you ending it up? So maybe because it's talking about the inner versus the outer. Okay. So three suggestions in terms of how we can understand the Braisa and still maintain our Rav Yehuda understanding that he knows definitively which one it is. So again, we're going to continue tomorrow with the exact same question on the table. Rav Yehuda says it's the right, not the left, Hadas Machras. It seems that way. Is he saying it definitively or is he saying it just simply as logic and guesswork, but he does not know definitively. And tomorrow we're going to continue trying to understand, get a conclusion on that matter. And Agarata, a lot of Agarata coming up tomorrow.